it says, we all know the beginning. When you come to the land that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you, Nachla is an inheritance. You inherit it. You really drive it all out. You shavtabon. You live inside it. Okay, that's the idea. There's a tremendous pshat over here that's given regarding the concept of Bikurim. Bikurim, we know, the first fruit that you have that grows in your field, the very first fruit that grows, that's what your chayiv to give is Bikurim. Really, you have no other chayiv. You just take whatever fruit it is, you tie a little gemi, a little plastic thing around it, that you know is the first fruit that grows, and then afterward you bring it to the base of Mikdash in Yerushalayim, you bring it there and you give it over to the Kohanim, you say a whole thing, etc., and that's what's in this week's parsha. Chazal tell us, however, that you should give 1/60th of your fruits to Bikurim. 1/60th of your fruits should be given. That's the shear that's given for something like Bikurim. The question is where they got that remez from. So the line is like this: you take from the first fruits of all the fruit of your land, that you bring from your land, you should place it inside a basket. Now the question is, how big is a basket, and what is this word tenet, and why use this word tenet over anything else? Why not in a basket like a sal? Why not in a kli? Why not any of those? Why does it have to be specifically a tenet? Okay, so Chazal tells us the following. Tenet can fit half a saw. Half a saw altogether. To give you a basic knowledge, saw is 6 kav. A kav is 4 lug. A lug is 6 eggs. So a saw can fit 144 eggs. Therefore, half a saw would be able to fit half of that. That's 72 eggs altogether. That won't matter. You don't have to worry about those numbers. But just to give you a basic idea of what it is, 72 eggs altogether. Okay, it's a half. Are you serious?
I'm dead serious. It's your birthday. We're definitely celebrating.
Wait, you joking?
No.
Wait, this all for me then?
Well, never mind. You can do it. Hey, you can do it, baby. It's all yours.
No, that's not going to happen. Thank you, Paul. We have underage drinking. Good. That's nice. We appreciate that.
Never stop me from drinking.
Okay, nobody's doing this yet. You keep it under the table until afterward, okay? Right before we dive in Mars. That's the time to drink. That's about them. We'll be chassidish for one day. Tenet is a half a saw altogether. One half of a saw. So, over here it says the following: the Gemara in Ksuba stuff Kuf Yud Aleph that says in the future, even non-fruit bearing trees, even trees that do not bear fruit ever, will give off enough fruit to be able to fit on the backs of 2 donkeys. Okay, so every tree is going to have the amount of fruit that can fit on the back of 2 donkeys altogether. How much is a donkey load? Bab Mitzvah in Pei Omen Aleph says that the amount that fits on the back of a donkey is altogether 15 sa'ah. So if you have 2 donkeys, come on, do the math, guys, you can do this. 2 donkeys, it's 15 times 2.
30.
Oh, there you go. 30 saw altogether. 30 saw that we have altogether. And a tenna holds half a saw. So if you're getting a tenna, half a saw, out of a total of 30 saw of fruit that come from the tree, you're talking about 1/60th of the amount of fruit there. And that's the idea. So Chazal are trying to tell us that the amount of Bikurim that we give is a remez, is being merames in this pasuk itself. That's why it used the lashon of tenet. Tenet is the letters of tes, nun, and aleph. Tes, nun, and aleph in gematria is 60 altogether. 9, 50, and 1 altogether. Net equals the number of 60. That's the reason why. But there's still a bit of a question. Okay, granted, there's a nice little remez, there's an idea that you're putting in the tenet, but then it shouldn't be v'samta v'tenet. It's not that you put it in the basket, it should be v'samta mi'tenet. Take everything that you put from the basket, take it out from the basket, and then be able to give it, because the tenet is the ikur. It's really the idea of 60 altogether. So why are we using tenet? Aside from that, why wouldn't you use the word kli? Kli is also the gematria of 60. Kof, lamed, and yod is also 60.
You take 60.
What?
Instead of 1/60, you should take 60.
60 altogether of whatever.
Yeah.
60 of whatever. So either way, so what's the remnant? What are we getting at? So the Chassam Sofer says an interesting shot. He says, you got to take 1/60th, right? 1/60th is 1, and then 59 others. There's 1 and then 59 others altogether. Tene, the Russian, is tet nun, that's 59, and aleph. 1 is separate. It's 59 plus 1. Kli is not that. It's 20, 30, and 10. So it's different from one another. But tene works out perfectly. It's 59 and 1. It's able to be exactly that 1/60th over there. So even though the truth is that medial rice from the Torah itself, you only have to give the first fruit and not anything else, but we're worried that you're going to mix in the actual first fruit with all your other fruits. You're going to lose the first fruit. You're not going to know where it goes. So in order to make sure, you have to separate the first fruit, that should be your aleph, and then a aside from that, you should have nun tes others, so that you know what's what, and then you know that you give 1/60 of your fruits altogether. That's the remez that we're trying to say over here. That's the concept that we have. So that's a nice little beginning to this parsha. But the rest of the parsha doesn't speak about Bikurim. We go into Bikurim a little bit, and then we get into Maaser Sheni. We say Maaser Sheni, Maaser Ani, the stuff that you bring to Yerushalayim, you give to the poor people, and then we get into the meat and the potatoes of the parsha, which is the brachos and the klalos. When Bnei Yisrael come to Eretz Yisrael, Kadosh Baruch Hu commands them to go up to Har Gerizim and Har Ebal and to accept upon themselves that if they do good, they're going to have good things. And if they do bad, they're going to be punished. And the Tokcha is in this week's parsha, with the longest running parak without a stop in the middle, in the entire Torah, within the Tokcha itself. It's a long, long aliyah. You get to the beginning of Kisavon, and you think like Rishon's short, Shani's short, Shlishi's short, Revi's sort of, you know, it's not so short, it's not big. Hamishi is short, and you're like, this is an awesome parsha. You think it's like Mitzvah Vayelech already. But then you get to Shishi. Shishi is the biggest aliyah. It's absolutely huge. It's almost 110 psukim altogether. So it's an absolutely huge, huge aliyah. So we have to understand what the curses are all about and what these brachos are all about. And it starts off in Parakop Ches. Parakop Ches, Pasuk Aleph, it says, Vahaya, Im Shemoa Tishma Bekol Hashem Elokecha, if you will listen to the voice of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Lishmor Lassus Kol Mitzvosim, to do all the mitzvos. You should know the following. Every day, a bas kol comes out and says the words, Shuvu Banim Shovim. Shuvu Banim Shovim. Every child should do tshuva. Now the question that you ask on someone like this, the Kedushas Levi asked it, the Baal Shem Tov asked it, the Degel Machon Ephraim asked it, it's asked by all the Chassidus Svarim. What's the point of a bas kol if no one hears it? There's no point to such a thing. Why would there be such a baskol going out saying, go do tshuva, if the only people who can hear it are the tzaddikim who are doing tshuva anyway? They don't need a baskol telling them to do tshuva. There's no need for such a baskol. What's the point of such a thing? That's the question they all ask, and it's a solid question. What's the idea?
Well, everybody does a few of eras. The tzaddikim guy wants them to hear of eras, so they've got one.
So it's only for the few tzaddikim in the world that can hear it. And then there's no point to say a baskol. Just give a message to those guys specifically. I'm not arguing the pshat. It seems such a waste. If you're going to get a baskol, then obviously everybody has to hear something. Somebody's got to get something out of it. What are we trying to get out of this?
Where do we learn that baskol comes every day? Where do we hear that from?
The truth is that this line of shuvu banim shovim, that it comes out every day, that is not mentioned by any Gemara or Medrash. It's only mentioned by the Chassidus Sfarim. Those are the only ones that mention it. However, there is another Gemara that mentions in Shabbos that there's a baskol that comes out every day that says that oy lebanim me'al bona shel Torah, woe to the children that they're not learning Torah properly. And that is a baskol that definitely goes out every day. That's already a Gemara. But the actual words of shuvu banim shovim is only brought down by the Chassidus Sfarim, and they don't bring down a source. But it is brought down by high Chassidus Sfarim. So there must have been a midrash somewhere that says this thing. But unfortunately, we don't have that exact line in our midrashim or our Gemara, that which we've seen. But the truth is the following. When it comes to this line of shuvu banim shovim, everyone is zocha to hear this baskol. Everyone. On their own level. Every single person in their own way. The way we call it is mazalayu chazi. You might not realize it, but your mazal is hearing it. And every day, there is your mazal sitting there telling you, you should probably do tshuva now. You should probably work on yourself. And you might deny it. You might say to yourself, no, it's not time right now. No, I'm in the middle of something. I'm busy. Go away. Come back in a couple minutes. But at that moment is a baskol. That's a baskol coming down from Shemayim, and it went straight within you. Guys, don't think of a baskol as this voice coming down from Shemayim like a big bullhorn going, all right guys, do tshuva. That's not what a baskol is. A baskol is 100% ruchni. And something that's ruchni cannot be in this physical world. By definition, it's in your head. It's in everyone's head. That's the concept. And that allows people to want to do tshuva every single day. Everybody wants it, and you have that level. And we don't even have the level of dibor at all in our world anymore. It's only in machshava. If someone would say, oh, I heard that baskol, the guy would be a navi sheker, and he could be killed if you would go out and you would say that I heard that baskol. He can't. There's no way to hear it anymore. It's in the world of machshava. The baskol doesn't enter your ears. The line is the baskol enters inside your heart. That's where it goes. You hear it in the other way around. That's the concept behind it. So there's a line. There's a line in Chagiga. And this line is where that I guess this idea of the Chassidus Sfarim come from. It says, Shuvu banim shovavim chutz me'acher. Everybody has the ability to do tshuva except for Acher. So what did that mean? That meant that Elisha ben Avuya, who had sinned terribly at that time, went up to Shemayim somehow, either in his mind or physically, whatever it is, and saw something that he shouldn't have seen, and just went off from it and said, oh, there must be two different gods. He was a fool. Came down, was thrown down to earth, and they said about him, chutz me'acher. Everybody can do tshuva except for Acher. Now we understand something different. It doesn't mean chutz me'acher is opposed to Acher, Elisha ben Avuya. What it means is, chutz me'acher is, but don't think that it comes from somewhere else and not from you. Chutz me'acher means, shuvah banim shovim, but you have to do tshuva. Chutz me'acher, it can't come from somewhere else. It can't come from someone else. That's not how this works. If you think that it's going to come from someone else, and someone else is going to force you, or someone else is going to help you, it's not how it works. Shuvah banim shovim is you yourself have to do it. And the fact is, certainly Elisha ben Avuya wanted to do tshuva. Elisha ben Avuya was a big tzaddik, and he really could have. It's not that a Kodesh Baruch Hu was saying you can never do tshuva and there's nothing you can do. Chutz me'acher meant that I'm not giving you siyata d'shmaya. I'm not helping you out. I'm not going to give you the support you need in order to do tshuva. That's the idea behind it. And this idea is not exclusive to Acher. It's true by everyone. It's really true by everyone that chutz me'acher doesn't just apply to him. It's that Acher, I'm not going to do tremendous siyata d'shmaya. Really, lots of people have that. It's not just Acher. Different people have different amounts of siyata d'shmaya. God did not allow Acher to have a thought pop in his head to do tshuva, but for sure he could have gone with it, and of course he could have done tshuva, and if he would have, it would have worked. Yes.
Right. Was Elisha ben Avuya, is it the one that went up there and went on a boat and foods?
No, you're thinking of that's a story with Ramban. Elisha ben Avuya, all it is in his, there were four people went up to the level of Pardes. Right, we have wrestling color. We have Rabbi Akiva, Ben Hazai, Ben Zoma, and Elisha ben Avuya. Rabbi Akiva was able to go up to Shemayim, see something. This means like the farthest level that the human intellect can go, and was able to stop himself and say, I'm not going any further. That's Rabbi Akiva. Ben Hazai died. Ben Zoma went crazy. Elisha ben Avuya went beyond the mind, and he just went totally off. He understood way beyond everything. He looked at the Malach, known as Metat, that was sitting up there writing down the squeeze for Klal Yisrael. And he said, Chas v'shalom, that's one God writing down the Schuyos. Who's the God that's writing down the Chovin for Klal Yisrael? Akadosh Baruch Hu said, that's not me. What are you thinking? Threw him down to earth and said, Shuvu banim shovim chutz me'acher. Acher was the Rebbe of Reb Meir. That's where the name Acherim comes from. Acherim is Reb Meir. Reb Meir learned the Torah from Acher. He was able, as the Gemara said, to throw away the shell and take the fruit from Elisha ben Avuya. And throughout the Gemara mentions, Elisha ben Avuya died. At the end of his life, he died and was sent down to Gehenna, and at some point something else happened. He eventually got a tikkun, was sent up to Shemayim, possibly by Rabbi Yochanan. There's lots of different stories how Elisha ben Avuya wasn't Zocha to be able to stay the way Rabbi Akiva was. Lots of different mice and four different reasons, but there's a lot of interesting things that go on with Acher, but that's the little deal with Acher.
Where was Acher's free will?
He definitely had it. He definitely had it. He did not take away his ability. That's what we're saying. He did not say you can't. He said you can't, but I'm not giving you siyata d'shmaya.
That's free will.
No, that's not free will. Free will is just the opposite. I'm going to argue the other way. The exact opposite way.
Siyata d'shmaya. You can't overcome the Zohar.
You definitely can. You still can. It's just extremely difficult. Siyata d'shmaya is the opposite, guys. You think of it this way. Free will is the ability to choose without anybody else around you. It's just you. Siyata d'shmaya means that you're being helped to be able to do something good. It's just the opposite. It's like something causing you not to have free will. It's something that's taking away your free will to sin and causing you instead to do something good. Taking away siyata d'shmaya puts him in this world, which in reality, it's very hard to get over my physicality because I don't really feel my neshama the way that I should. So it's much, much harder for me to do. But there is no question that if Elisha and Avuya would have sat down and said, I'm going to do tshuva, there's no question HaKadosh Baruch Hu
would have been greater tzar since Hashem took away his...
Oh, 100%. It would have been the greatest tzar in the world. You can't imagine such tzar. Take away all siyata d'shmaya, you have no help whatsoever, and you're deciding on your own, I'm still going to be with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's no greater thing in the world. The problem was that Acher did not want to. He didn't want to, he didn't try. That was his prerogative, and he could do whatever he wants. And listen, he was still a huge Talmud Chacham. Reb Meir still wanted to learn from him, but the fact that he wouldn't go back on something that he felt was being mentioned straight to him, that's what we're trying to say. We're trying to say that chutz me'acher is there. And let's think for a second. What was the line? Shuvu banim shovavim. Chutz Me'acher. Let's think. Elisha Menavui is sent down from Shemayim down to earth. He hears a bas kol come out that says, Shuvu Banim Shogavim. What should have been the immediate thought when he heard that? Do tshuva. Had he done tshuva right at that moment, of course it would have been accepted. But then he waited for the end. He just wanted to hear a little bit more. Wait, is that it? Then he heard Chutz Me'acher. And who knows if Acher himself caused HaKadosh Baruch Hu to say Chutz Me'acher. Maybe it wouldn't have been that way. Maybe there just would have been the little baskel of Shuvu Banim Shogavim. Acher would have heard that and he should have done Shuvah. But if he wanted to hear more, is there a suggestion? How do I do Shuvah? And once he waited a little bit, that's when he heard Chutz Me'acher and he said, I can't do it anymore. And then he was lost to Klal Yisrael. By the way, Elisha Ben Avuya still makes Pirkei Avos. Still in there. None of us made it. Elisha Ben Avuya is still in Pirkei Avos. He says that it's harder to teach an old dog new tricks. That's from Elisha Ben Avuya. A piece of paper that was erased is very hard to write something down on. But a piece of paper that's brand new, it's very easy to put something down on. So you should learn when you're younger rather than when you're older. That's the line from Elisha Ben Avuya. You can't teach an old dog new tricks. That's Mamish. That we learn from him. We still have Torah from him. Yes.
So it wasn't from Elisha Ben Avuya that he heard true evangelists with me out there. That you meet people at the attitude of, well, I'm going to hell anyway, so I might as well go to hell. Yeah, exactly, that's exactly what it is. If I'm going to Gehenna anyway, I might as well go straight down to Gehenna and go as far as I can. We're telling you, no, you still have a chance.
HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give you a chance. Granted, you might not have the highest level of Olam Haba. It'll hard to be to get all the way up there. I don't know if you'll be able to get there, but at least try, because Kol Yisrael is don't care about Olam Haba. It's never worth it to say to yourself, well, I've done so bad already, there's no way I'm going to go anyway, so what difference does that make? You should still be able to work on it. And that's the line, B'haya im shamoa tishma l'kol Hashem Elokecha. If you want to listen, you'll hear the voice of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You'll hear that bas kol come out. That's what it means in the beginning of Parakop Ches Pasagalo. If you really want to hear it, it's there. It's waiting for you. And all you have to do is listen. But it's there, sitting there waiting for you to be able to do everything that you can. Just do it and just go with it. Yeah.
How is Elisha Ben Avuya able to predict of all Klal Yisrael in the future that that everyone would be able to do tshuva? With that pasuk, he says, Chutz Me'acher. Maybe there would be someone in the year 5.
Elisha Ben Avuya didn't say that. This is the line from the Kedushas Levi. Kedushas Levi. What we're understanding is something of Rachamim HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Rachamim HaKadosh Baruch Hu is that he never let a person go astray without a chance to come back. If there was such a thing that the person could never come back, he'd die. The person would just be killed. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't need him in the world. If the guy cannot do tshuva, why would he be here? What would be the point of letting him sin more? Why would HaKadosh Baruch Hu do that? Does he not have the ability to send the Malach HaMavis and kill the guy? There obviously has to be a tikkun. There obviously has to be something that's there. And who knows? Who knows? Maybe the point of Rabbi Elisha Ben Avuya being here was to teach Rabbi Meir. And Rabbi Meir learned a ton from him. We're getting to our next part. The pasuk right afterwards says, all these brachos will reach you, v'hisi gucho. And they will grab onto you. Literally, it's like they'll chase after you. When you listen to the voice of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, well, what's going on? You run away from brachos and it's chasing after you? What does that even mean? How do you run away and then just all of a sudden it comes after you? So the point is like this, definitive. If you're not learning Torah, right, your head is in business all day, or your head is in the work that you do, and you're only doing that, you have nothing else inside your head, it's just business, work, sports, a little bit, right, and everything else, right, maybe family makes it into the top 7, right, but otherwise, everything else is everything else except for Torah. When it's like that, then when you make a big profit, when something great happens, then immediately you're ecstatic. It's just like, oh my gosh, this is what I've been waiting for, my big break, this is it, this is the deal that I've been waiting for. That's number one. If it goes the other way, says the Mitzvah, if your mind is in learning all day long, and you really couldn't care less about anything you eat, you do, or anything, about your clothes, your food, anything like that, then even if somehow you won the lottery, your wife won the lottery, she comes home and says, look, we won the lottery, all your mind is like, okay, I'm in the middle of a Baruch Bear right now. I don't want to think about anything else. Like, it doesn't make that much of a difference. We could win the lottery, not win the lottery. You're in charge of the house, I'm not thinking of anything else. Those are two extremes, very big extremes. Torah Lishma, that's unbelievable, that second guy, but regardless, those are two very big extremes. There's another guy, and obviously there's another guy. There's a guy whose head is into his learning, and he loves his learning, and every time that he sets himself up, he's mamish into it, but then when he goes to work, his mind is in his work. His mind is in his work. Now, a person like that, his thoughts of Torah can permeate his head, even when he's at work. If he does it correctly, then even when he's sitting and working and doing something that has nothing to do with his everyday life, he can sit there and all of a sudden these thoughts of what he was thinking about the last night when he was learning, I don't know, whatever, Dafyomi or whatever it else, it just goes into his head and he's like, wait a second, how does that make any sense? And while you're in the midst of working, you have such an idea of something that's there. Then, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to wake you up and show you that he gave you a bracha, the Hisi Gucha. You might not be working hard at that moment. If you're sitting there and you're thinking those Torah thoughts, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will send you that bracha where it'll hit you, where you're not even trying for it, and all of a sudden you get this phone call and you have this unbelievable deal you weren't even thinking about yet. That's the bracha of the Hisi Gucha. It's not going to be something which is automatic because you're spending all of your time in Parnasa, Parnasa, Parnasa. It's not going to be something you're not going to care about because your mind is only in learning. It's when you're doing a little bit of both, then when in the midst of business, you put yourself, your mind, to learning, that's when the Hisi Gucha, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will allow the bracha to come to you, even in your lofty state, so that you can say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, thank you, and you'll realize that it's there. The Ben Ish Chai says that it's even more so. No matter how far you run from it, it's going to happen to you no matter what. He brings two stories that illustrate this point. Number one, a simple, good-hearted man lived a very normal life. Wasn't very rich, wasn't very poor, was just a normal guy. One day, the fisherman went out to whatever it was, Tigris, Euphrates River, it was in Baghdad, so it's one of the two, and they brought back a large cachet of fish. Larger cachet than they normally would have gotten. Right? What do you mean?
Tigris.
Oh, the Tigris? Why not Euphrates?
Because Baghdad's on
the
Tigris.
Oh, Baghdad's on the Tigris. Oh, so it might not have been Baghdad, it could have been Iraq. But we'll call it Baghdad and we'll go with the Tigris. Thank you, Mr. Math. So now, in that, so you have, they brought back this huge cachet of fish that they brought everywhere. So, you know, they heard that everything was really cheap because you have that much. Obviously, when the supply is that much more than the demand, right, all the money is going to go down. So the fish were really, really cheap. So everybody was sitting there saying, oh wow, this is going to be so cheap, let's go check it out, let's go do this, whatever, right? So this guy was sitting and he was doing whatever, and his wife said to him, you know, go to the shuk and go buy us one of these nice little fish. He's like, listen, you know, I don't really feel like going to buy fish right now, I'm busy with something else, I don't feel like going. But she begged and begged and begged. So he said, alright, fine, I'll go. Now this fish was called a beni. I don't know if I'm translating it correctly. It was bees with a little dash, yud nun yud. That was the name of the fish. So that was called a baini or a beni, I don't know, whatever it was, but it was a very expensive fish. There was another fish that came from the Tigris River that's known as a goton. Again, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it correctly, but the goton is like golden fish. Good, yes, goldfish. So anyway, a goton, which was a bigger fish, was bigger than the baini, but it wasn't as nice. It wasn't as, you know, a hush of a fish as it was the baini. So he went out to the shuk looking for the baini. There was one guy in the shuk who was selling his stuff, selling his wares, and he's looking around and he's trying to find somebody to buy his gaton. He didn't realize that everybody would have baini that day and everybody was buying the better fish. So his gaton, this huge fish that he had caught that he thought he was going to get all this money in the world for, now nobody's buying the gaton and he's worried. This thing's going to go rotten. But he doesn't want it to go rotten. So he went down. He wanted to go down in price, but still nobody wanted to buy it when they had the really good fish sitting right there. Everybody wanted to get the baini. So he saw this guy, this poor, kind-hearted man, you know, this guy there, and he went up to him and he said, hey, what are you looking for? He said, I'm looking for a baini. My wife wants a baini. So he said, listen, I got this awesome gaton. Look at it. It's probably three times the size of any baini that you'll find in the shuk. Why don't you take this instead? This guy's like, listen, I don't want your fish. I want the baini. My wife asked specifically for the nice type of fish. I'm going to get her that. He said, no, it's not worth it for you. Please, buy this. I'll give you a great deal on it. He said, how much are you going to give me? He said, half price. He said, no, I'm not going to buy it for half price. It's not worth it. So he brought it down a quarter of the price. Now, this guy was getting a steal on this fish. He said, how can I go? It's a huge fish. It's going to last us for a few days. How can I not buy this fish? It's unbelievable. So he sat there and he said, all right, fine, I'll do it. Takes his money and buys the gaton instead of the baini. Right? Takes the gaton home. And as he's walking home, he's like, my wife is going to kill me. She asked me specifically to go get the baini, and instead she got me this instead. I went and got this instead. What was I thinking? So Seth's thinking to himself, oh, I can't believe I did it. So he decides, you know what I'll do? I'll make it into what?
Go to the bar.
Go to the bar. No. This isn't England. So he decided... I know pubs, I'm sorry. Pubs. Right. So he decided, you know what? I'll cut it up into tiny little pieces.
Make it
gefilte fish. Yeah, gefilte fish. The beginning of gefilte fish. This is the makor for they had. He said, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to cut it up into tiny little pieces. That way my wife won't be able to tell if it was gaton or it was baini. And I'll say that it was baini and I got an extra big baini. That's what I'll say and I'll get out. Everything will be okay. So it's cutting up the fish. He knows in the stomach there is a huge pearl. huge pearl that the fish had been able to swallow. No, it's a different story. I know the kid's book story that you're talking about. It's a totally different story. No, this is a totally different story. And then it fell, okay, whatever. That's a totally different story. He went and he took it and he was like, oh my gosh, this is an unbelievable jewel. A little jewel. Chassidish! First of all, there's no wagon. Okay, there's no forest that we know of. Nobody's going to get birth. Yeah, and we're going to end. There is going to be an ending, eventually. But not yet. Okay, he goes and he says, you know what? I got to sell this thing. He goes over to a jeweler and he goes, finds the jeweler in the shop, and the jeweler sees the pearl and looks at the guy and he's like, what? This doesn't work. You're wearing like a poor man's scuff. This is a huge pearl. Where did you get this from? Obviously, suspecting the guy of thievery. This guy said, listen, I'll tell you the story. He tells him over the story. The rich man looked at him and said, you know, that's so amazing. Because I'll tell you, the same thing really happened to me as well. The rich man said, I had a story just like this. Story was that at one point, his father had become very, very ill. And the doctor had suggested for him the only way that he's going to get better is if he goes to this certain vacation spot in the middle of nowhere. Now, it wasn't a time that people usually went on vacation. It was the end of the winter, beginning of the spring. It was still cold outside, freezing at night, and it wasn't the time that people usually go on vacation. But the doctor said, you have to go. So eventually, it was like after weeks, months, whatever it was, he's like, alright, fine, I'll go. And he went at this time that nobody else was there. But he takes his tent and he starts pitching it somewhere, because back then, I guess, there were no houses and vacation spots. And he takes his tent and he puts it down one place. It wasn't a good spot. So he put it in another place. It wasn't a good spot. Finally, he finds a third place, and there's all these places open because nobody's there right now. It's a vacation spot where nobody has come yet. And he puts it down in one spot, knocks it down to the ground, and all of a sudden his peg hits something hard. He looks down under the area, and the man said, my father, he found this huge treasure box full of jewels, absolutely full of jewels, right? The halacha is, you're allowed to keep it. Noah shoves Aveda by such a thing, because Rove Akla, you're not going to be able to find it. It's around the entire country. You don't have to be able to give it away. And apparently there was a law that if you find something in the street back then, you have to give it all to the government. Anything people find in the street, you have to give to the government. But at that point, right, because he had found it with nobody else there, so he said, I get to keep it for myself because nobody else knows that I have it. That's how he became rich, and that's how this man ended up becoming a jeweler, because the jewels in that box, he had studied them and gotten into them, and therefore he said, that's how I got it as well. This is the pshat, says the Ben Ishchai. The hisi gucha means it's going to reach you in the most strange ways. The ways that you would never imagine. You look at it and say, there's no way that's going to happen. The hisi gucha. It's going to happen to you anyway, even though you didn't even try, even though you didn't attempt to do it. It's going to happen no matter what. That's the concept of what we're trying to say over here.
The wife was happy.
No, the wife said, obviously. No, I wanted the pizza. Obviously. How is that?
Where he took advantage of the person selling the fish.
I don't, you know, halakhically, first of all, let's assume that the guy who was selling the fish was an non-Jew.
But he still would have known that. He still knew there was a pearl there, wasn't he? No, he didn't know there was a pearl.
How's he supposed to know that? Yeah, he wouldn't know that. I was looking at X-ray vision, but that would make the whole story very different.
So you don't know the value. Maybe the guy was selling the value. But the fact is that they did value.
Oh, so let's go with Elio and Avi. That's the easier way of putting it around. Listen, halakhically speaking, in both cases, I'm not so sure what the halakha is. If the government says you have to give all of the avedas to the government, I don't know what you'd have to do in that situation. I'm not so sure. Yeah, I would assume you have to give it back. Apparently, the Ben Ishchai held not that way, considering he told the story and he was okay with it. So apparently, he held not that way, but I don't know. So that's the question on story number two. But either way, regardless, it does show that crazy riches came to a person easy gucha. That's the concept behind it. Yes, Moshe.
So,
now
that I was telling you the same thing that I said about the whole thing.
Oh, that Lal thing. Yeah, but that's it. That's Jews. That's the only issue. That it's Jews from other Jews. That's the only issue. I'm not saying that.
My father was against. He's like, you shouldn't do it
because it for sure is a type of gasoline.
That thing. If you
want
to get a full refund, you get a full refund.
A full refund.
Of whatever it is.
Yeah, I know. I understand.
A lot of man said you should do it.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, alright, we won't talk about that. We're not going to work to that. Yeah, we're not going to work to that. That's a big
issue.
Alright, here we go, guys. We have in Pasuk Nun Beis, it says, fine. They hate Sar Bechol Shorecha. All of your enemies will siege you at your gates. Ad Redes Chomosecha, until your walls fall down. Hakbos Dabetsuros, the high ones and the fortified ones. Asherat Tavotefain, that you are assured in. Bechor Tzefa, and all of your land. Bechol Shorecha, they're going to siege you everywhere. This is a reference, says the Gemara, to Nebuzaradan. When Nebuzaradan and Nebuchadnezzar was his chief general, when Nebuzaradan took over all of Yerushalayim, and it says that he besieged Jerusalem for 2.5 years. At the end of the 2.5 years, I've read this homosef until you all fell down. The question that's asked by the Gan Rabbe is that the wording is off. It should not say the word redes, which sounds like they fell on their own. It should be ad horidu, until they brought down the walls, until they knocked down the walls of Yerushalayim. That's the word that it should say. That's the idea. But there's a Midrash Eicha. Midrash Eicha brings down the Nebuzaradan siege Yerushalayim for 2.5 years. He was running out of food. And he said, that's it. I can't do it anymore. I'm going to have to go back. And he was ready to go back to Babylon. They were going to give up on sieging Yerushalayim. They just weren't going to be successful. Right? Remember, they still had many people who were giving money to the people in Yerushalayim. Then Kalba Sabua, then Tzitzak Kesses, Nakdim and Ben-Gurion. There were people with a lot of money who were able to support them for 21 years. Now granted, some of it was burned by the Baryonim, but there was still a lot of stuff. I'm sure there was availabilities for people to be able to have. So Nebuzaradan said, we're running out of food, we're running out of supplies, we're not going to be able to keep my army here. We've been here for 2.5 years. There's no way we're going to be able to go. So for one reason, for whatever reason or another, HaKadosh Baruch Hu put it in Nebuzaradan's head to measure the walls outside Yerushalayim. He measured them, and he saw that they had shrunk since the last time he had measured them a year ago. He went back the next day and he measured them again, and it was even smaller. Went the next day. Every day, the wall was sinking more and more into the ground. When the wall became shorter and shorter, and it came to the point where they were very easily able to take the walls, because they were right there, the Mamash were right there, he was on, sent the message, they all went, they destroyed the walls, the, what was left of the walls, and then they ran inside and took over Yerushalayim. Here's the pshat. When your enemy sieges you around your gates, they will siege you ad redes chomosefa, until the walls fall down on their own. And Nebuchadnezzar maybe knocked down the rest of Nebuzaradan, I'm sorry, maybe knocked down the rest of it, but that's the pshat, and this is the idea of why the word redes is used. That's the remez that we're referring to in this pasuk itself. The last thing we're going to say is the following. In pasuk 61, Samach Aleph, it says, Gam kol choli v'chol makas shelo kasu v'sefer Torah azayis, all sicknesses and plagues that are not written in this Sefer Torah, Yalei Mashem Aleph Adi Shem Doch, God will put upon you until you get destroyed. Now you should know, there are 98 curses in Parshas Kisavo. And the Gemara tells us, it's not even the Gemara. It's 98 curses, says the Gemara. Says Rabbi Yonah and Eichitz, it's really 100. What are the other two? Gam kol choli v'chol maka. Asher lo kasu v'sefer Torah azayis. The choli and maka that's not written in this Torah, that is going to come up against you as well, and you're going to have that as well. So what is it? Says Rabbi Yonatan Eichitz. What is gam kol choli v'chol maka? What are these hits that are so bad that we can't even write it in the Torah? We can't even have it in the Torah itself. You know what it is? Misas talmidei chachamim. The misa of tzaddikim. A tzaddik's death is one of the worst plagues that can be, and we don't even want to mention what happens when a tzaddik dies. The question is, what's so bad? I mean, granted, okay, he's a tzaddik, right? Okay, so we understand there's a problem when a tzaddik passes away. We understand that. I'm sorry? And it's even a kaparo, right? 100%, it goes the opposite way. You think that's even better for Klal Yisrael. A tzaddik passing away is a better thing. It's as if all the people are supposed to die, and the tzaddik dies instead of him. So it's even better for Klal Yisrael. What's the problem? Says the Chasam Sofer, one of the most unbelievable answers I've heard in a long time. Says, when a tzaddik dies, and a Talmid Chacham dies, he takes with him certain abilities that Hashem allowed people to have while he was still alive. When that tzaddik in Talmud Chacham is alive, he has a certain amount of chachma, bina, and das that he allows to come down in this world. And when he leaves, that chachma, bina, and das goes straight back up to Shemayim and goes away forever. You can never get it back. For example, the Navi tells us, when Eliyahu Navi passed away, none of the prophets that were in the yeshiva of the Nevi'im, none of them were able to prophesy for the next year. Because when Eliyahu HaNavi died, he took with him the Chachma that he had. And no longer was that Chachma available for the other Nevi'im. No longer was that there for everybody else. All of Klal Yisrael is different. Every human being changes when a tzaddik dies. You're no longer able to be masig. You're no longer able to understand things that you understood beforehand while he was still alive. That's the idea. A maka is in one place. One area where everything's there. Holy spreads throughout the entire body. A maka is a hit on your arm. A choli is a sickness, a disease that goes through and ravages your whole body. A maka is a representation when there's a tzaddik in a city that nobody knows about. That city had something because of that tzaddik, but not necessarily the world. Choli is when the whole world is affected by it because it's a huge Rosh Yeshiva, or a huge tzaddik, or a huge Gadol B'Torah. When there's some somebody like that, that's the idea of what you're missing. And that's the concept of Gam Kol Poli V'chol Makar Shalom Kol Sefer Torah. I can't even tell you what happens when such a tzaddik passes away. That's the concept of what happens over here. We're going to stop with that, guys. Have a great